Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, December 2nd, 2010. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for the Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, immigration.com, our two-weekly conference call for the community. This call is being recorded. If you folks don't want your voice to be recorded, please hang up. If you do talk with me, I would suggest you keep your identities confidential when you speak with me because this call is publicly available. Just because we are doing this call does not oblige you to be our client nor us to be your lawyers. This is merely a community courtesy call. That said, let me get started on the questions that have been posted. The first question is from Afghan, who has an issue with the date of birth and name. From Afghanistan to Pakistan when they moved, they had to change their names because they were non-religious and they changed them to something religious. And then they filed an I-130, but in 2005 they got reunited with their mother in Norway. In I-130 they use old names which are still at use at home. But the birth dates were changed from solar calendar to Christian calendar. That's why the dates of birth are also different. When we filed I-130, we had Afghan nationalities. See, nationality is not a problem. It's the country of birth that matters. I think DNA is the answer. I think you already know the answer. What you should do is you should contact the consulate in Norway, U.S. consulate. Speak with them about your situation. Explain to them what has happened. Most of the consular officers are pretty sympathetic to extraordinary situations like yours, where you became dispossessed of your own country and you had no choice but to go through these things. Go ahead and give them a call. Let's see how it works out. If there is any extraordinary problem, just send me an email through the contact us form on our website, immigration.com. On top there is a form that says contact us, and just say, Rajiv, on this date we had a conference call and I had posted a question and this is the problem I'm having. I'll see what I can do for you. And of course we don't charge for minor things like that. So go ahead and send me an email if there's a problem. Next question, R. Walia. I'm an H-1B. Parents live in Kenya and own a business there. Wants to buy a business in USA, but is on H-1B, what do we do? Well, you cannot manage the business, but you can buy the business, and that's dangerous advice in most cases, because smaller businesses, you end up doing some part of management. So, if you want to buy a business in USA, obviously, you cannot be an active owner on H-1. You can be a passive owner. That's my interpretation of the law. And a passive owner is somebody who doesn't do actively anything towards the business. Think of it like this. If you bought 100 shares of IBM stock, you don't get to go knock at an IBM office and say, hey, open up, the owners are here and we are going to manage the operation. You don't get to sign checks. You don't get to hire or fire other people. So it is okay for somebody to be a passive owner, but for smaller businesses, I think it's going to be very difficult for you to keep a passive role. But going back to Kenya and getting an L1 doesn't work. You would have to be there for 1 year. And in any case, if the business is too small, getting an L1A through it is another challenge. All in all, I think it's a difficult thing for you to do. So Haib says his I-140 is under extended review. It's been pending. I-140 was approved in 2007. Priority date has been current for the last 5 months. So, can you help me? I would want you to contact both, first contact a local congressman's office. See what they can do for you. And if that doesn't work, try the ombudsman's office also. They might be able to help. Not much we can do short of filing a lawsuit against the government, which I don't recommend in most cases. Next question is from an individual, SOG SOG, who wants to, he's on 485. Oh, 485 is not filed yet, okay. Working for company A on H-1B. H-1B is valid for 2 years. I-485 is not yet filed. Company B, in the meantime, got an H-1B transfer, got it approved. Can I take 6 months leave from company A, work for company B, and come back to company A after 6 months? Well, here's the weird thing. If the leave is agreed upon, I don't see why it is illegal. But I'll tell you this. This is a very gray issue. If you had asked me this question a few years ago, I would have said no problem. No problem, okay? But recently I'm seeing some switches in government position that make me doubt whether they're going to accept this arrangement or not. Okay. I feel that you should be okay, but that's just a judgment call. I cannot cite to any law that says it's okay. To come back to, make sure that you, when you leave company A, you make it clear that you just want a 6-month leave. And that way they are not liable to have to pay you wages. Okay? Otherwise, company A's liability to pay you wages continues. To come back to company A, do they have to file H-1B transfer again? Not if you are just going on a leave. Company A will not pay me. Is it okay? Yes. Company B will be paying me. That's fine. One thing that I am thinking is that, one thing that could become a question is, if company A has a job for you, which you are supposed to be doing, how is it that they are okay with you leaving for 6 months? That's something that would concern me. Other than that, I don't see any major issues here. You can go ahead. Okay? Next question, ready one. Getting ready to send my package for green card through marriage to a U.S. citizen. I have one misdemeanor charge over 10 years ago. You know, misdemeanors are a little bit confusing at times. Sometimes, typically what does misdemeanor mean? Misdemeanor means less than 1 year punishment possible for the crime. So it's a minor crime, right? But sometimes the punishment can be more than a year, then even though they call it misdemeanor, it could be considered to be a felony under U.S. law. There's something called aggravated misdemeanors. So I always worry about that, but typically, to the spouse of a U.S. citizen, there should be, and I'm not sure, I haven't looked at the law from this angle. First of all, if it is just a normal misdemeanor, it should not be a problem. Okay, you can look up something called petty, T as in Peter, E, Tom, Y. Petty as in small. Petty offense exception. So petty offense exception says that if you've only committed one misdemeanor, and there are certain other conditions, you haven't gone to prison, etc., then, or you haven't been imposed a sentence more than 6 months, something like that, you are not in any trouble at all. It's automatically forgiven. So chances are you're going to be okay, but somebody will have to take a look at your case specifically to give you more particularized answer. It looks like you should be okay. Next question, Ajitesh Tyagi 21. Farm labor search audit. Application was selected for audit. Audits are very common these days. And if you look at my blog, you will see I have noted for a couple of places I've noted that because the Department of Labor has increased their staff, we are likely to see an increase in audits. And audits are a mystery, a closely held mystery. We know that audits can be random, but there is also business rules programmed in the system which pick cases for audit based upon certain criteria that nobody knows about. Okay? So we can guess at something, but it's not something I can tell you that anybody knows. So how much time does it take? Usually 2-2.5 years. Once an audit begins, can I apply for my new labor to my company or some other company? Your own company, maybe not. Another company, yes. There is no law that says you cannot have two firms pending through two different companies. But you cannot do a second filing for the same company for the same job in the same location. Next question is Glad 2000, who says, I had applied for H-1B extension in 2009, 6 years ends in October 2010. case got denied in November 2010. I have approved labor and I-140 pending. Applying for a new H-1B with a different company. If my H-1B gets approved, do I have to go to home country? Well, if your I-94 is already expired, then you would have to go outside USA most likely. But if your I-94 has not yet expired, then you could go to Canada or Mexico for consular processing. You can capture the time spent. Can you capture the time spent waiting on a pending extension which got you eventually denied? Nobody really knows the answer to this question. I would say yes, you can. But there are, USCIS could take a position that's different than what I'm suggesting. If I intend to go back to home country, come back to pursue a degree on F-1 visa, will it be an issue? Yes, because you have an I-140 pending. So they can deny it based upon immigrant intention. Number four, inability to maintain employee-employee relationship was a part of the denial. Now, Company B, I was sponsored by Company A who contracted with Company B, and Company B contracted with N clients. Company B is sponsoring my petition. We have prepared. Yeah, it looks like you have a better case now since you are reporting to team lead from Company B. What are the stamping chances? Well, stamping is a very iffy issue. I have seen some very bizarre denials from U.S. consulates in India, where despite having all the documentation, the H-1 visa was denied for some very vague reasons, very, very vague reasons. Like I've seen vague reasons like it appears that your employer is either unwilling or unable to offer you an H-1B job. How do you respond to something like that? So stamping is definitely iffy. I don't know how it is going to go. But 30 or 40 days of unlawful presence are not a problem. Next question is Arun J. While my current employer is in the process of applying PERM, can another employer also start PERM? Yes. Can two PERM applications be active? Yes. Is it same for I-140 also? Yes. As long as they are both in good faith, we're not trying to play games with the government? Yes. Next question, TQNK wants to know adjustment of status to permanent residence. They had a J-1, went back, came back on F-1, got H-1B. Now, the J-1 had home residency requirement. Well, remember, there was no question on H-1 forms whether you have always anyway been subject to H-1. What am I saying? There was no question on the J-1 form. Let me scratch all of this. Let's start all over again. There was no question on the H-1 form that said, or that asked you whether you had at any time been on J-1 and whether you were subject to home residency requirement. Therefore, many times, people like you who went from J-1 to F-1 and then F-1 to H-1 got the H-1 simply because the government did not know or did not have a way of tracking that you had a two-year home residency requirement. You see? Therefore, just because you got F-1 to H-1 does not in any way bind the government. You have talked about estoppel. Estoppel is almost never successful against the government. I said almost because it's a very, very narrow exception. If government is responsible for some affirmative misconduct, like they deliberately lied to you about something, only then they might be estoppel. In your case, estoppel is pretty much impossible. Okay? You are still subject to the two-year home residency requirement, unless you get a waiver. Or you go to your home country for 2 years, you cannot get a green card. And if you do get a green card in by mistake, they can rescind it. You're right. So, and by the way, when you do the two-year home residency requirement, you got to go to the country of the last permanent residence before you got the J-1, and you got to stay there for 2 years. You cannot keep coming back. If you are here in USA for too long during that time, if you come for 4, 5, 6 months, you might have to start the 2 years all over again. You can come for a few days, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, a year maybe, okay? For in a year, if you are here 1-2 weeks, nobody's going to bother about that, but then you have to spend that much extra time outside. So if you were here 2 weeks 1 year, 2 weeks the other year, now you have to be outside for 2 years and 4 weeks, okay? So you cannot, you have to do the home residency requirement has to be complied with or waived. Tahir Vora wants to know, fiance applied for K3 visa. Checked my status. It shows post-decision activity. Can anyone tell me when will I get interview call or visa date? Well, interview call is up to the consulate, and I'm not sure what the post-decision activity means, because once the K3 application is approved, it should be sent to the consulate via the, I believe it is via the NVC. National Visa Center. So what you really want to do is contact the consulate and see if they've got the paperwork. Next question, user_local, gap in overseas employment and lack of documents. Well, first of all, you say that there's a problem that the experience letters are incorrect or if they are missing. Well, first of all, H-1 requires no experience unless you are trying to qualify for the H-1 because you don't have a degree. So let me give you an example. Let's say you did 2 years of college, but never finished college. Now you are under U.S. law, short of 2 years. Okay? The 2 years of college that you are missing, you can supplant with 6 years of experience. 1 year of college equals 3 years of experience, specialized experience in your own area, in all fields. Okay? So unless you are trying to qualify through that, experience letters should not have any relevance. Okay? Make sure anything you submit to the government is 100% true and accurate. If it is not, I don't want you to submit it to the government. Don't take this lightly, because if you send something to the government and it turns out to be a misrepresentation, they can bar the applicant from entering USA forever. Okay, so just make sure that that's taken care of. Next question is Andre WGC. Andre WGC says, I got my green card last year, had to travel to India for an emergency. Now I'm there for 10 months. After 12 months, you know, you lose your green card automatically. You cannot file re-entry permit from India. Lost your passport, you better get your passport ready very, very quickly, because if you don't come back within that time, you're going to have a problem. I doubt very much you can travel without your passport, but speak with the consulate if there's any exception possible. Okay? So if you go over 12 months, they probably will not let you in. In fact, let me rephrase that actually. The way the law works is, first of all, when you have been outside more than 1 year, the airline should not issue you a ticket, as far as I know. Okay? And if the airline does issue you a ticket and you land in the U.S., then they will let you in, but they will lift your green card probably, and they will tell you to report on some date, or you'll get information from an immigration court on when to report for revocation of your green card. Okay? You go through a hearing then. Next question is M. Helper. Got his green card or her green card 5 months ago. Working with the same employer, planning to start own firm. Can I do that? I don't see why not. I mean, you've been with the employer and you've done your time. I don't see why you cannot go on. And if you want to do a part-time job or anything else at the same time, this is totally okay, in my opinion. Government could disagree with me. See, I have written an article on this in my blog. Read up on that. Go search for that article. And it talks about, I mean, in my view, the most important thing is, at the time you got the green card approval, your AOS approval, 485 approval, you should have the intention to stick on indefinitely. If 10 days later you change your mind, I think it's okay. But normally, if you change your mind 10 days later, there can be a presumption that you wanted not to stay with that company. See, in any case, in the age of AC21, all of this has become very murky, and I'm not even sure the government can come after somebody who leaves the day after they get their green card. I won't advise it. That's just causing problems for yourself. But, you know, 5 months, I think that's a reasonable period of time. Ram underscore law, sixth year of H-1B ends on March 2011. Stamp expired September 2010. I-140 premium. Okay. Work for a software consulting company. The project will end in February 2011. Wants to go for his marriage in February 2011. I'm hearing that a client letter is mandatory for me to secure visa extension. That is correct. What are my options? Not very many, sir. Not very many. Because if you go, you may not be able to come back. Even if you had an unclient letter, even then it's uncertain. So, I don't know what to tell you. It's not a very good situation. And I agree with you, Ram, that it's not fair for the government to target only consultants, even though they are obeying all the laws and they're still getting paid. But that's what you're dealing with. In the first place, if you go without an end client letter, chances of coming back are next to zero. If you go with an end client letter, you still can have a lot of problems. Okay? Next question, and the last question actually, Unirox. Perm denial appeal and new perm filing from the same employer. You cannot file a perm for the same job, for the same company, for the same location while a perm application is pending, a perm application or appeal is pending. Can you file for a different job? Yes, you can, but it gets very complicated. Because this is what Department of Labor said a couple of years back. I'm not sure what they're doing now. But what they said was, if such a case occurs where the appeal is pending, what we'll do is, even though your second case is for a different job, we will deny that firm. And then you have to file a motion to reopen, which means you are adding a life cycle of 2.5 years to your case. See, if you're under EB2 category and you're from a country other than India, born in some other country, you say your degree is from Germany, I don't know where you're from, but let's say it's other than India or one of the backed up countries, then it makes sense to just withdraw the appeal and file the second case. I don't know what the strength of your appeal is. It looks to me like the appeal is kind of lame, because if the offered salary is lower than the prevailing wage, that is a loser for sure, 100%. So I'm not even sure why the appeal was filed. At that point, I would have said, okay, we messed up, let's do it again. Remember, perm denials are very common. I mean, we haven't had denials in the last 25, 30 years, maybe 2 or 3 denials. And then all of a sudden, perm comes along and the government keeps changing rules every 5 days. Denials are now common. I wouldn't say that we are getting a lot of denials, but we are still getting, you know, substantial amount of denials as compared to 0% to, you know, about 2%, 3%, 4%, which is a lot, which is, you know, 3-4 times more than we used to. So I think at some point you're going to have to cut your losses and just refile the application. Well, guys, this is excellent. I am done already. So I'm going to open the call for questions. First of all, let's talk to people who have already posted and they have some follow-up. Press star 6 to talk with me. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Yes. Can I have questions?
Yes, please.
Hi, I'm QNK for number 11.
Number 11. Let me open your question. Give me 1 second. Number 11. Okay. Let's see what's going on. Oh, J1, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think that is, you mentioned that Topher is not likely to success because the government is not making a mistake here. And you're saying because the form, H-1B form, doesn't allow them to track my J-1.
Yes.
But
it's different than what you just said. Estoppel is only available in very, very limited cases when the government deliberately misleads you, which is called affirmative misconduct.
Okay.
So if they deliberately mislead you, they may, not always, may be stopped. Mm-hmm. But estoppel against the government is next to impossible. Don't even think about it.
Oh. So the fact that the law, the U.S. court, saying that if I had the J-1 and I not fulfilled the 2 years, I couldn't get H-1B, and now they gave me H-1B, it doesn't mean that they deliberately mislead me?
No, it does not mean that. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Let us say you filed your taxes.
Yeah.
And IRS sent you a check for $1 million refund.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you went and spent that money.
Mm-hmm.
You better believe it. You still owe money. That money is still owed to the government.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come back and take it from you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of the same thing. If government gives you a benefit by mistake, then you can't hold it to them.
Mm-hmm. So it's even mistake or then I cannot say that it's deliberately mistaken.
Why would they deliberately issue you an H-1? I mean, it's not going to work. Let's not talk about that. I think, a fruitless discussion. Let's talk about other questions you have.
Mm-hmm.
In my view, it's not going to work. No estoppel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think second point, you've mentioned that if I spread out my 2 years for over too long periods of time, like 1 week here, 2 weeks there, did you say I might have to restart all over again if I
have to, yes. You have to do the 2 years in one chunk. You cannot just do 3 weeks now, 5 months later, 3 months later. That doesn't work. It's got to be done 2 years in one chunk.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I think I got some for advising. It can be cumulative.
No, brief periods are okay.
Okay.
Week here, week there, mm-hmm. out of your home country. But then you have to do extra time for that time that you have.
Right. So is there any specific law regarding how long I can split it? Or how long my time out of the country can be?
There isn't, there is just a general, there is a say it shouldn't be too long. It's just brief and casual.
I see.
Okay.
Okay, it's just a mental call, more or less, right?
That is a judgment call, yes.
I think, okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Hey, Raju, this is Soheb.
Hi, Soheb.
I posted question number four.
Number four. Okay. Oh yeah, extended review. By the way, other people in your company also have the same problem?
No, I'm not. They say they don't have it. I'm not with with that company anymore. I took a full-time position.
Okay.
So what happened is this was approved back in 2007, and I filed for my 485 in July 2007, and in March 2008, status got changed. The possible reason that attorney said was he might have chosen consular processing instead of adjustment of status in my 140. So he said that might be the reason why.
That is never the reason for an extended review, ever.
Okay. I mean, the status doesn't say extended review. I contacted the local congressman.
Go to your congressman, and if that doesn't work, go to the ombudsman's office, see what they can do.
Yes, but the thing is, even to open a service request, because I'm 140 belongs to the company, right? I mean, they don't give any information to the beneficiary.
Yeah, that is correct. So is the company not with you? They're not cooperating?
They cooperate, but they say I'm not with them anymore. So you have to either contact the attorney who filed it, and that old attorney doesn't give me any information. He doesn't even talk to me. So my new attorney, I mean, who can file a service request now because I'm with a new company, with a new attorney?
Only the company or the company's lawyer, somebody who has submitted their G-28 on behalf of the company.
No, my G-28 is with the new attorney. He's not the attorney who filed 140.
No, does.
So,
is the G-28 of the attorney should be in the I-140.
Oh, okay. Okay, you mean the old attorney who filed my 140?
No, it can be a new attorney who submits his G-28 in the I-140 if the employer signs the G-28.
Okay, but...
So you can actually have a newer lawyer representing you and your company. They can then open the service request.
But 140 is usually like the company check, right? What could be...
I have no idea, Sahil. I can okay. only. Is your name Sohail or Sohail?
Sohail.
Okay. So yeah, I have no idea. I can only guess. That's why I asked if other people in the company have a similar issue.
It's a pretty big company, and I don't think anybody had this kind of issue.
Then the only thing I can think of is the security check against you.
Okay.
But it shouldn't take
okay.
this long. It's too long.
Yeah, it's too long. I mean, initially when I contacted the congressman office regarding my 485, they said it's under background check. And few days back, they said it's under extended review, and that's what my 140 case status say when I look at online. And in the worst case scenario, let's say if anything happens to 140, so what will be the next step? Like, will I have chances to appeal or?
Only if the company wants to appeal. If the company wants to appeal, they can appeal the case, and while the appeal is pending, which is about 2.5 years, you keep getting H-1 extension.
I'm not an H-1 anymore. I mean, I'm using my EAD card.
You can still get back onto H-1.
Okay. Okay, but the new company should be willing to sponsor the H-1.
The old company should be willing to sponsor the to file the appeal, and the new should be willing to sponsor the H-1, yes.
Okay, so the appeal can be made only by the old company who filed 140, that's what you mean?
That is correct.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Good luck.
Hi. Hello, Raju. This is Sark here. My question is, question number is 5.
Yes,
taking leave and working for a different employer?
Yes, I got it. Uh-huh.
Okay. My company A, they have approved my vacation, and I have given them a vacation letter also. So, and I have started working for company B also. So, if it's an issue that you say that I am willing to go out and resign from company A, if there is no issue, then I will hold on to it for 6 more months, and then I'll try to come back.
I just don't know the answer to that question. My judgment call was it's fine. Okay.
Okay.
But whether it's going to be an issue or not, I cannot tell you. Because Obama government has pulled some pretty nasty surprises on us. They
okay.
make absolutely no sense. So guess who I'm not voting for next time. So yeah. But you know, don't take any chances if you can avoid them. But I personally don't feel that this is uncomfortable or anything. So I don't know. It's your judgment call.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Unirox.
Yes, ma'am. What number?
Last question.
Which country were you born in?
Yeah, I'm from India only, so just did my education from Massachusetts.
Yeah, the problem here is the appeal looks like a loser to me.
Okay.
Because you shouldn't even have waited, in my view.
I mean, I came to know just a week back, so I haven't even applied for the appeal yet, so...
Yeah, I would probably not do the appeal, I would just redo the green card.
My question is, can I do the new form from the same employer, Rajiv?
Yes, if you don't file an appeal, you can.
Okay, and also, say my last form was on job title programmer analyst, so if I don't appeal for the old form, can I... apply a new firm from the same employer with the same job title, that is programmer analyst?
If you don't file an appeal, yes, you can.
Okay. So in this case, I also have a question like myself. If I'm already in my fifth year extension, I have H-1B. So if I want the 7th year extension, will that be based on my old firm priority date? I mean, is my old firm should be 365 days prior, or my new firm should be 365 days prior?
New firm.
Okay, so the new firm should be 365 days prior.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. All right, folks, next person. Are we all done?
Oh, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Raji. My question is not there, but can I ask you a question?
Yes, you can.
Sir, I don't remember if you recall, but, you know, I have moved to Chicago, and, this was regarding the management analyst position where my office was in Chicago, and you told me it's better to move off there. But I wanted to just check, when I applied for my H-1 in July, the FLC data center, according to the salary, the minimum wage, what an H-1B should get, was $46,405, okay? So now the, you know, the salary has changed for 2010 to 2011. So it's changed to $51,000. Should I ask my employer to increase the wage now, or should I just leave it the way it was filed?
Well, there is some law about updating the salary every 2 years, I think. But as a practical matter, I don't know of any employer who does that. Okay, pretty much whatever the LCA says, that's what you get paid.
Okay, but
whatever the LCA or the I-129 says. That's
right, but since my employer has a good relationship with me, it to be on the safer side, if there is a, you know, audit or if there is a surprise visit, and, you know, if these guys sometimes...
Look. If you want to raise, that's great, but
yeah.
Does the law require it? Probably not.
Okay. And so I wanted to just check, there's a lot of surprise visits going on, you know, at the employer side. So what is that we should be prepared with? Because, you know, we have to keep the I-9 and we have to keep the, you know, I-1 turning.
I'm actually writing an article on this. We'll probably be done within 3-4 weeks.
Okay.
And once it gets published, it's going to be published by the American Bar Association, American Law Institute. We've talked about two articles, one on Department of Labor investigations,
mm-hmm.
and other on USCIS and consular investigations. So
okay.
I'll put something together for everybody. Then you guys know exactly what to keep in-house so that's
okay. Okay. And the last question which I had was that, you know, since I'm the only H-1B dependent on this company and all other four employees are U.S. citizens, so it is a pretty much a five-man company. So I wanted to go ahead and start my green card. I was just thinking, is it safe right now or is this the right time?
Well,
because I still have 2 years in...
Hang on, let's take a couple of steps back. First of all, when the firm laws initially came, Department of Labor had indicated that companies with less than 10 employees are automatically suspect because they feel that there's too much closeness between the employer and the employee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As a practical matter, I have not seen any of that. We've done firms for companies with just one employee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they have gone through. So, first of all, if you don't take a chance, you will never know where the firm goes.
Okay.
Anybody who has a shot at filing perm should try it anyway.
Okay, so just to let you know, sir, I've already got a 140 approved and a labor approved for my last employer, which I just left last month.
Okay.
So I am in good terms in terms of if they have my record. I don't know if they have it. But, you know, there was just an RFE on my education.
A prior perm or I-140 approval has absolutely no guarantee of future success.
Okay. And you're saying we can also file for labor and green cards even from next month onwards, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's what I just wanted to check. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot, sir.
Good luck to you, sir.
Yeah, God bless you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Anybody else, folks?
Hello, Rajiv. This is GLAD 2000, question number 8.
Question number 8. Just one second, sir.
8 and 9, actually.
Okay,
so my question was that if your I-94 has also expired, H-1 denied, and you have a 30-40 days.
Let's stop here for a second. When did your I-94 get expired?
It got expired in December of 09.
Okay, but your H-1 got denied only in November 2010, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, all right. Now, remember, from November 2010, from the date the case got denied, if you stay here, you're already deportable. If they deport you, you cannot come back for 5 years. But in any case, if you continue to stay up to 180 days, then you would be barred from entering USA for 3 years automatically. Okay, and if you continue to stay 1 year past November 2010, you're barred for 10 years. This is called 310 bar.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, yes. Yeah, so my question was is that, having unlawful presence for 30-40 days.
That's not going to be an issue for the visa system.
Okay, and in some of the forms, they have a checkbox where
you have
they
to
have
say yes.
Okay, and one more thing about the Canada and Mexico thing, there is no, it's not worth the risk trying to get
you
back
can,
in
you
Canada?
You can try as long as you're willing to fly to India from there only, because you may not be able to come back.
Okay, so have you seen cases?
Yeah, I have seen approvals in cases like this, although technically they shouldn't even be taking applications where somebody has been out of status for even one day.
Okay, so it is worth the risk to go to somewhere like Toronto and be ready to fly to.
No harm in trying as long as you're willing to fly out of Toronto.
Okay. Yeah, I got my answers. Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Sorry about the F1 visa. You were talking about even if I-140 is pending, you would be considered as a
We had a very long set of discussions on this actually last year in May. So if you go back to our conference recordings and go back to May, there were actually two full sessions that we devoted just to applying for a student visa when your green card is pending, and it's unlikely that you will get a green card.
It's unlikely that you'll get a student visa. Because even though you have not applied for 485, it's still unlikely that you will get it.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else?
Hi, Raju. This is Rajesh.
Hi, Rajesh.
Hey, I just have a quick question.
Sure.
Basically, I'm trying to file my green card to EB2, but I actually do not have a master's degree, so... I know that I just heard you saying that 3 years of education is equivalent to 1 year.
Not for green card, for H1 only.
Okay, but for green card, what is the option like?
Well, talk to me. That's a lengthy discussion. Talk to me about your situation. What degrees do you have?
I'm a BTEC.
BTEC is a 4-year degree, right?
Right, in India.
And do you have 5 years of experience after BTEC?
Yeah, four and a half years in India and 2 years in US.
Yeah, all experience counts, yeah? So you should be able to...
2 years of experience, 2 years of experience with the same employer also counts?
If they offer you a different job. For example, if you started with them as a program analyst and they are planning to do a green card for project manager, something like that, then you can use the experience gained with the same employer as long as the two jobs are more than 50% different.
Okay. And... also, I have a 1 year experience while I'm on the degree, which is it considered as professional experience as well?
Well, that would not count towards your EB2, because EB2 experience is only that which you gain after your degree is over.
Okay. So, all right. And also, my latest H1 is pending for 4 months almost. Do you think, should I approach them?
Your H1 is pending for 4 months?
Uh-huh.
I think the normal processing time is anywhere from 4 to 6 months. It doesn't look like a big deal.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Raj.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else? Okay. Very good. Good
talk. Yeah? Rajiv, hi. I'm back again. I wanted to, specifically find out that, I was trying to approach your company, and I don't think anyone is there right now on the other side, but... the only thing was that, I haven't been able to get in touch with anyone who can help me out with green card. So who can I talk to in your company? Because my situation is only a one H-1B company and with 4 employees being U.S. citizens. So whom do you feel and how should I go about it,
Why don't you give me your phone number? Stay on the phone. Let me take it off the recording and then you can give me your phone number. Either I'll call you back myself or I'll somebody else call you.
Hello,
Can I give you my number right now?
It's being recorded. I don't want to record your phone number.
Okay.
So hang tight. Just a minute.
Yeah, sure.
We are almost at the end of it. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Andrew here, question number 14.
Mm-hmm.
I'm outside. I'm in India right now and I'm getting back to the States after 12 months. I already have a green card.
Okay.
That's
going to be a problem. I already discussed your question. You didn't hear the answer?
No, I was trying to, though. They were having a power outage over here.
Okay, well, I have already recorded the answer. The answer is you can try going to the consulate and see if they can do something. Best thing is to expedite your passport, because if you're outside for 12 months, you cannot come back. Your green card is gone.
There's no way I can apply for re-entry permit from
you
over
cannot.
There.
Not from outside USA, no, sir. But talk to the U.S. consulate and see what they can do for you.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Right, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. And listen to the recording. It will tell you more. Good luck. Anybody else?
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello.
Hey, I have a question. I was actually listening to one of your conferences like a couple of weeks back. And they said that there was a guy who wanted to go for his I-140, but he was concerned about the fact that one of the previous employers did not pay the salary for a couple of months.
Sure.
And then you asked him that if he left the country out after that and came back.
The reason I asked was, listen, there is a section of law called 245K as in fight.
Mm-hmm.
245K says this. Anybody who's applying for an employment-based adjustment of status is allowed to be out of status or unauthorized employment for up to 180 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the interesting thing is, if you leave USA and come back, all your past sins are forgiven and you have a new 180-day period.
Oh.
So let's say you were out of status for 200 days. And now you want to apply for adjustment of status. What I would do is, I would send you outside, bring you back in on H-1, and when you come in, I would apply for a 485.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was asking.
Oh, okay. The question I wanted to ask on this is, in my case, my labor has already been approved, but it's from a different employer. And my 30 date is also current right now, but I won't be able to join that company for another 4 months or so
That's no problem. Go ahead and apply for I-140 and 485 both, then in 4 months join them.
Well, but if my date is current, if the 485 gets approved before that, then what?
That's very, very, well, even if it does get approved, that's very good. Just go join them.
Oh, okay. And do you recommend filing it on premium or normal?
I would file premium at this point. As long as the company has the ability to pay wages, yes.
Yeah, I think they do. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else?
Yeah, can I have a question about H-1B transfer?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, I found a new employer, and I wonder when I can start working for the new employer. The time I file the H-1B transfer or the time that I get the approval. And
Hang on 1 second. Somebody said that they are on the conference call and they are not able to hear. Huh, that's interesting. Hang on 1 second. Our reception just sent me an IM that... Hang on 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. You have to repeat the question. I got distracted there for a second.
Yeah.
You found a new employer. I heard that.
I'm on H-1B and I found a new employer. And my question was, when is the time I can start working for the new employer?
Are you currently on H-1, sir? What is your current status?
Current status. I'm still on
H-1. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Are you currently on H-1?
Yes, I'm currently on H-1. And
Are you in status? Are you working right now?
Yes, working right now. But I found an employer who to sponsor me.
No, fine, I got that. People who already have an H-1 and are in status, they can join the new employer as soon as USCIS receives the application for the H-1 transfer.
Oh, so I get when I get the receipt, okay.
Okay, now here is another, but there is a more aggressive interpretation. There are other lawyers who say, and I say that too, what I say is that actually if you read the law that talks about receipt, it seems to mean as soon as USCIS receives the application. We don't have to wait for the receipt. As long as we know it was received. So it depends upon how conservative you want to be. If you want to be a little aggressive, start working for them as soon as the papers are received by USCIS.
I see. And the new employer, the new company is small, but the pay is even higher than previous company. But the number of employees is much less. They only have a couple of employees. Will it be a problem
It can be, because I don't know what the overall profile of the company. Are you working at a client site? Are you working in-house? In-house is good. In-house is better than client. Do you have a product? The company is a product company. What do they do?
Well, they do software development for real estate.
I have a feeling you'll be okay.
Okay. But as long as the wage is higher than prevailing rate.
Yeah, of course.
And they are a legitimate company.
They're a legitimate company? Yes. You should
be. Okay. So the size company doesn't...
I'm never worried about the size only. I'm always worried about the stability and, you know, how long they've been in business, what kind of work they do.
I see. I understand. Yeah, right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Hey, Rajiv.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Rajiv.
Yes, hello.
Hey, this is Soheb here again. I posted question number 4.
Right, Soheb, you are the I-140 guy. Uh-huh.
Yes, I'm 140 guy. Rajiv, thing is, my old employer who filed my 140 and also my old attorney may not be willing to help in this case. So
you cannot do anything. You cannot do anything without their help. Everything belongs to the company up until the I-140 stage.
Meaning the old company, not the new company.
The old company, of course, the petitioning company.
Okay. So even though I filed a new G-28 form with a new attorney, cannot appeal to the 140? Okay.
No, it means nothing.
Okay.
Alright.
Okay, but what he told me was when I applied for AC-21, moved to a new company, he said apply for AC-21 because they will be canceling
my 140. Is your 485? Is your 485 pending?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, that is a totally different. But your I-140 is still not approved, right?
No, it's approved, but after it got approved, it went into something else.
Yeah, you see, the problem is, you didn't mention the H-21. The problem here is that the underlying I-140 is being questioned, and that causes a problem for the AC-21. This is a very difficult situation to be in. I think your best bet is to focus on the I-140, see what's going on, why they are holding it up.
So, but my new employer or my new attorney cannot contact them regarding my 140, right?
I don't think they can. I don't think they'll talk about it.
Okay. So, the best bet is to contact my old company and have them contact USCIS.
Yes, sir. Or let them file a G-28 on behalf of the old company.
Again, I mean...
new lawyer, old company, G-28.
Okay. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck. All right, folks, are we done?
Hi, Rajiv. This is Kiri Rocks again. My question is, like, if I'm not attending and if I'm applying a new form, can it be the same location and same job description, everything can be same?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely everything can be the same.
They don't deny any, I won't be having any issues depending upon my prior denial, right?
The prior denial is absolutely no problem. It's being denied for a reason that was merely an oversight more than anything else.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck. Folks, anybody else have a question? All right. Well, very good.
Rajiv, I'm still there, so
oh, yeah,
just holding on.
Let me stop the recording first.
Yeah.